Good afternoon. I'm David Chappell. Welcome to this talk on Azure and its competitors, the big picture. Now, there are lots of ways to think about a cloud platform like Azure in comparison to its competitors. Here's what I'm not going to do today. I am not going to do a feature comparison. I'm not going to walk through Amazon and Azure and Google and the rest and say, well, this one does this like that. No, no, no. Notice the subtitle, The Big Picture. This talk is not about features. It's about a different perspective on doing these comparisons. In particular, I'm going to start almost where I left off in my keynote this morning. Because in that talk, you might remember, just a few minutes ago in this same room, I talked about this notion of the existing enterprise IT platform that we're all familiar with. I talked about the idea of the new default platform, where we now have diverse client devices. We have more and more SaaS apps as opposed to on-premises apps. And critically, relevant to us, we build new applications on public cloud platforms. Now, there's a point I want to make here, and my slide indicates, that you might not have thought about. It is that in this new default platform, public cloud platforms like Azure, like Amazon, become the new foundation for competitive advantage. It might not be obvious why that's true, so let me tell you. If I buy an application, whether on-prem or a SaaS app, my competitors can also buy it, right? Sure they can. People buy applications typically to keep up with their competitors. You don't get much differentiation by buying an app typically. What gives differentiation, real business value in the sense of uniqueness, is custom apps, things only you do. And as those more and more migrate to the cloud, cloud platforms, that means that your public cloud platform becomes the foundation for how your organization creates custom apps and thus creates differentiated business value, aka competitive advantage. So public cloud platforms are a really important decision for every organization going forward. And it's not a decision that is all about the technology. It is rather about much more than that, including this business reality that these are what support competitive advantage. So, I'm going to start by giving a really big picture perspective on public cloud platforms. If you know this space really well, forgive me. I'm going to take 5 minutes tops. It'll be very fast, I promise. But I want to make sure we're all on the same page. And so to start, for my comparison, I will divide the technologies of public cloud platforms like Azure and others into three big categories. Category number one, compute. Runs applications, maybe existing, maybe new, maybe both. Category number two, data. Lets us store, query, analyze data. Category number three, everything else. Everything else, right? There's a lot in category three. Active Directory and other directory services, machine learning, integration, media services, tons of stuff. Category three gets bigger and bigger every day, it seems. I'm going to focus this comparison mostly on categories one and two, compute and data. You know why? Because that's where the money is today. That's the biggest areas of usage in public cloud platforms today. I'm going to focus right there because of that. Okay? So here come the world's fastest definitions of cloud compute. This morning I alluded to this. You probably all know this. IaaS, actually, Europeans mostly say EaaS, but English speakers say IaaS. We can say IaaS, right? I've also noticed that Americans say Azure. Everyone else says Azure. I'm an American. I'm going to say Azure IaaS. You can say whatever you want. It's fine. There's no right or wrong here, I don't think. But IaaS, of course, is where you just get VMs on demand and work with them yourselves, raw VMs running Windows Server or Linux, typically. PaaS, PaaS, is where you have services, such as the one I mentioned this morning, App Service, provided for you inside those VMs. You provide the application and say, run my app. Great. Okay. For data, there are a few big categories. There's blobs, which remarkably are the most popular at this point, the most widely used in terms of dollar value today. There's relational storage. There's NoSQL storage, all of which are services platforms can offer. You can also certainly run traditional relational and NoSQL databases in IaaS VMs. So those are some options. For the everything else category, I'm going to somewhat arbitrarily pick a couple of things to look at a little bit. One of them is identity, directory services. And the reason is it's really important. As the world moves to more and more SaaS applications, something is going to become the Active Directory of the cloud world. You know, on-premises Active Directory provides single sign-on to all sorts of apps, and it's ubiquitous. It's used everywhere. Something has to solve that same problem of single sign-on for the cloud world. And so it's a very important service in this new default platform. I'll also talk a little bit about machine learning, which we discussed this morning a bit. There's lots more we could do, but I only have 45 minutes. So, and by the way, I noticed people taking pictures of my slides. Thank you. I'm flattered. I'll send you the PDF if you'd like. Okay, so you need not do that, but still, if you want to, feel free. All right. The main structure of my comparison this afternoon is going to look like this. I'm going to use this grid, where the columns are technologies, IaaS and PaaS for compute, blobs, relational and NoSQL for data, and then the two others I somewhat arbitrarily chose to talk about, identity and machine learning. And the rows are vendors and technologies. Azure, Amazon Web Services, Google, this open source project called OpenStack, and at the bottom of my comparison, Salesforce.com. Now, maybe you're thinking this. Maybe you're thinking, well, David, I understand why Microsoft's on that list, because this is Microsoft's event. I know why Amazon is there, and maybe Google, but maybe you're thinking, where's IBM? Where's HP? Where's VMware? Where are my traditional enterprise vendors? Why aren't they here? And why did you choose those to focus on? Well, it turns out I will discuss IBM and VMware a little bit later on. But the reason I chose those to focus on is because the world has just changed so much. And the best way I know to tell this story is to walk through the history of Gartner's Magic Quadrants for Cloud IaaS over the last few years. So let's start with the first Gartner Magic Quadrant for Cloud IaaS. IaaS winds up being a very important service here. It was the first Cloud MQ Gartner did. And Cloud IaaS effectively acts as a proxy for the cloud platform as a whole in some ways. So here's Gartner's first Magic Quadrant for Cloud IaaS. Now, most of you probably know these already. If you don't, the quick summary is, as a vendor, you want to be up here in the upper right. That's called the leaders quadrant. You don't want to be down here, lower left. That's called niche players, right? But in general, this is a bit broad. In general, the more upper right you are, the better off you're doing. Now, I got to be clear. I don't work for Gartner. So these are their quadrants, but my opinion is expressed on top of the quadrants. So don't confuse Gartner with me. Gartner's quadrants, my perspective on top of them. So here's the very first public cloud IaaS MQ, October 2012, a little more than 3 years ago. People, that was ancient times. We spoke Latin and Greek back then. London was a walled city when this was done. Right? This is, in our industry, this is like forever ago, right? But look at it. Who's the leader? Amazon. No surprise. They invented this business, this market. Microsoft and Google aren't here yet. Now, Microsoft had shipped Azure already. Azure was released. But Azure only did PaaS initially. Google was here as well, but only with PaaS, as we'll see. So neither of the other big players was doing IaaS at this point. Instead, there were a bunch of these odd little hosters Those guys are Hoster, Savvis, Terramark, that Gartner put the leaders quadrant. Kind of an odd choice in some ways, but that was what they felt. Okay, great. Now here's the next one, a little less than a year later. Now what happens? Well, Amazon's still the leader. In fact, they're even further out in front. But now, Microsoft is here. They began offering IaaS 2 months before this was released, in actual release. And they're already in what they call the Visionaries Quadrant. Not too bad for a two-month-old technology. Not too bad, right? Google is not yet doing IaaS. And look at this. Rackspace and HP are both here. Rackspace and HP have been the most visible supporters of OpenStack. Or at this point, at least, they were. And now look at this. IBM. IBM is where you most don't want to be, the lower left of the lower left quadrant. Gartner would hate me for this, but I always think of it like this. There's the leaders quadrant, and down here, there's the losers quadrant. And so at this point, poor IBM is sunk down in the losers quadrant. No place they want to be. So what happens? The next MQ. Amazon's still the leader. Microsoft is now also a leader, which is interesting. Google is into the market, and they are about where Microsoft was in the previous MQ. Look at them big enterprise vendors, the classic vendors. Look where they are. IBM is now a visionary. How'd they get there? They bought somebody. Classic IBM. They bought a hoster, mostly, called SoftLayer. I'll come back to that later. So they moved up a bit, which is great. VMware and HP are still both in the niche player quadrant, the loser quadrant. Great. The latest one, earlier this year. Amazon's the leader. Microsoft's moved up some. Look at this. Google's entered the market, but not moved much from last time, about where they were a year ago. IBM's actually gotten worse. They've gotten worse. They moved down a bit. And HP has totally left the market. HP is gone. They canceled the public cloud service. What are we seeing here? We are seeing an enormous transition in enterprise vendors. We are seeing classic enterprise vendors who've been very important and huge for years not being major players, except for Microsoft, in this space. This is why, in my grid, I have the vendors I do. It reflects the general perception, I think led in many ways by Gartner, of what's happening in this space. Who's winning, who's losing, who's important, who's not. So I will discuss some of your classic vendors in a little while. But in this market, it looks like we're seeing new people arrive, new vendors arrive, and become dominant. So let's start with Azure. As you probably know, Azure has IaaS, virtual machines. If you were here for Corey's talk right before mine, he discussed some of these. I discussed some PaaS technologies as well that they offer. Microsoft's Blob technology is called Blobs. I love that name. It's a great name. Excellent name for the technology. There's SQL database for relational storage. There are several NoSQL choices. There's DocumentDB, there's Table, there's support HBase. And for identity, there's Azure Active Directory. For machine learning, we discussed this morning, there's Azure ML. Great. It's worth taking a second to make sure we're all on the same page about Azure Active Directory, because it's really important. So let me tell you why. Here's the deal. Let me ask. Who in this room is not running, you're not running Active Directory on premises? You're not doing AD on premises today. I see one of you. Okay. I see two of you. Almost none of you. AD is almost ubiquitous. It's not a monopoly, but it's very widely used. The idea with Azure AD is you can connect this cloud-based service of Azure AD to your on-prem AD. And now, when a user logs into their domain, their local Windows domain, into Active Directory on premises, it's now called Windows Server Active Directory. When a user logs into AD on premises, they, of course, have single sign-on access to all the on-prem apps like they always have. Doesn't change anything. But because you've now connected your on-prem AD to Azure AD, they also have single sign-on, no further login access, they can at least, to applications running on Azure. And in some ways, most surprisingly, Azure AD also gives them single sign-on access to applications running elsewhere. So out of the box, for example, Azure Active Directory lets you have single sign-on to Office 365, no surprise, Salesforce.com, CRM, Google Apps, Dropbox, a whole bunch of things. The point here is that Azure AD wants to be the Active Directory of the cloud, the thing that provides single sign-on to all sorts of SaaS apps. So how are they doing in their quest? Well, turns out there's a Gartner Magic Quadrant for this. The MQ, what they call IDaaS, Identity as a Service. So how's Microsoft doing? Well, the leader, the only leader, is a company called Okta. They're relatively small. They run on Amazon, AWS. Good technology. Number two is Microsoft. I'd say number two because they're up as high and further to the right than anybody else in this quadrant. So number two in this space. Microsoft, though, has this big advantage, which is they own Active Directory. And they also have the trust of most of you. So that's why I said this morning, I suspect that most of you are going to wind up running Azure AD, using it at some point, because it's becoming central to this new cloud world. There are lots of other companies offering IDaaS, mostly smaller players. Interestingly, neither Google nor Amazon are in this space. Now, Amazon has identity services that let you access, control access to their stuff, but not a generalized solution like Azure AD. It's interesting. They've chosen not to be in this space. So think about Microsoft in this world. As I mentioned earlier, Microsoft was slow in offering IaaS. They began with PaaS and didn't release IaaS for several years after that. But the market really wanted IaaS. It's the big market today in this space for a variety of reasons. So Microsoft, as you've seen, caught up reasonably quickly with that. Microsoft has lots of strong relationships with all of you, for example, which is interesting. It's an important thing for IT leaders. And Microsoft also promotes this notion of a hybrid cloud. They recognize that all of you, most of you, have an installed base existing that you must link with these new cloud platforms. So Microsoft's story is very much around hybrid cloud because they believe that's what you need. That's what you want. Okay? Amazon. Amazon has technologies across almost all of these columns as well. And again, in no sense am I being comprehensive here. If I were to list all of the technologies in Azure, Amazon, Google, this table would go on for another block or so, much, much further. We're ignoring lots of this stuff. We're doing the important things, the things that really matter commercially today. So for Amazon, there's EC2. For PaaS, you know, Amazon has not seemed to care much about PaaS. They've got this thing called Elastic Beanstalk, and more recently, Lambda, which is interesting. Lambda can run like JavaScript code on demand. It's a very interesting approach to PaaS. Their approach to naming here is interesting. Elastic Beanstalk. Elastic Beanstalk. Is that not a stupid name? But you know, having said that, I have in fact sworn a holy oath to stop criticizing how vendors name their technologies. And the reason I've done that is that a while ago, one of these vendors hired me to help them name something. And within 20 minutes, I realized how incredibly hard the problem is. All the good names are taken. All the bad names are taken. All the names are taken. And so let me restate what I said earlier. Elastic Beanstalk, it's a wonderful name. I love that name. Excellent name. Their blob service is called S3. They've got a database service, various NoSQL services. No identity, but there is a machine learning technology called Amazon ML. Amazon ML is interesting. It's a bit simpler than Azure ML. Where Azure ML targets data scientists, Amazon ML targets developers. So it does less, but it's easier to use. Which one is right? I don't know. We'll see. My guess is that they'll end up with both of them in both platforms, both styles, eventually, because both clearly have value. Assessing Amazon, well, you know, they invented this market, right? Remarkably, they are a startup that got it right out of the box immediately. The first things AWS offered were IaaS and blobs, and those remain the most commercially important technologies in public cloud platforms today. That is, the most money is spent there. They got this right out of the box, which is pretty impressive, actually. They're viewed as a leader, as we've seen, unsurprisingly. One big difference with Microsoft is that Amazon is focused utterly on public cloud. Amazon has called private cloud false cloud. Their perspective is, move your stuff to our world and you'll be happy. Microsoft's is not quite so much that. It's more work together. So that's a big difference between Microsoft and Amazon, the focus on hybrid cloud for Microsoft and not so much for Amazon. Google. Google also has technologies in most of these columns. Compute Engine for IaaS, App Engine for PaaS, Cloud Storage, Cloud SQL, Cloud Data Store. They have a prediction API, which is somewhat like Amazon ML, a relatively simple machine learning technology. Looking at Google in this space, they made the same bet Microsoft did. Their bet was the market wants PaaS. They were slow in offering IaaS, even slower than Microsoft. But they now seem serious about IaaS. They didn't at first. I mean, the thing about Google in this entire discussion is Google serious? Do they really want this market? Because for quite a while, they only offered Linux in their IaaS. But without Windows Server, you can't be serious for enterprises. Then they supported Windows Server last year. What did they support? Last year, they supported Windows Server 2008 R2. Last year. I thought they might next support Windows NT 3.51 or something. It was a very strange choice on their part. They now support 2012, which is good. But at the same time, as my slide says here, you can't really, or at least they don't, monetize their cloud platform through ads. And for Google, monetization via advertising is a sine qua non of who they are. It's what they do. And so it's challenging for them. For most analysts in this space, like me, a common question on our minds is Google serious? Do they really want this market? I'll come back to that later on. It's unclear. It's unclear to me, at least. They're behind a bit technically because they started so late. And so Google is trying to be a price leader. They have said that cloud platform prices should follow Moore's Law, which is pretty impressive. It means we'll have huge drops going forward. That'll happen anyway, I suspect. When Google cuts, everyone else follows, and so on. When anybody cuts, all the big guys follow. Nonetheless, it suggests we're heading for a very competitive world here, and a world that's great for you, where prices just drop and drop and drop and drop for public cloud platforms. In fact, honestly, within just a few years, my own belief is that no rational CFO will let his or her CIO build new data centers. Because as prices keep on dropping, driven by the competition with Microsoft, Amazon, Google, it'll make no financial sense. These guys can do this so much more cheaply than we can. So going forward, I suspect this price competition will make cloud computing much, much, much more attractive financially than building your own stuff. How about OpenStack? Well, OpenStack really isn't a vendor. OpenStack is an open source project. And here's the thing. If I'm a user, like many of you, I love this idea. I love this idea. OpenStack provides software for IaaS, for blobs, for databases, actually more than this. It's hard to really draw the line here. They provide more than this as well. So if I'm a user, I love the notion of standards. OpenStack says don't get locked into a Microsoft, an Amazon, a Google. No, no, no. Use OpenStack or choose a public cloud vendor who uses OpenStack and you won't be locked in. Users love standards, right? But here's the problem. Users love standards, vendors hate standards. Vendors will always fight against standards because vendors love lock-in. Makes sense for the vendors. So OpenStack is just another incarnation, I would argue, in the ongoing battle between vendors and users about lock-in. Users don't like it, vendors like it. Who wins those battles? Answer, it's rarely you. And so OpenStack does what? OpenStack says, look, we're a standard. We're open source. Use us. Don't be locked in. But it leaves a bunch of holes that vendors must all fill in individually in their own unique way. So vendors can say, we're standard, and still lock you in. Perfect for vendors. OpenStack today is also pretty unfinished. It's a project to put this stuff together for yourself. So it's been having limited success. And if you're interested, read Gartner's comments. Gartner is not terribly complimentary. Neither am I. I'm skeptical about OpenStack. I'm skeptical of this whole thing, I have to say. There are companies that offer public cloud IaaS based in OpenStack, but they're fading away because the big ones were Rackspace and HP, and they've both left the pure public cloud IaaS market. So what's happening with OpenStack going forward for public cloud IaaS is really unclear. Its most visible standard bearers were HP and Rackspace. HP left the market entirely. Rackspace now focuses on support more than providing infrastructure. So what's going to happen here in the public cloud IaaS market with OpenStack? Unclear. I confess to having not much optimism. So finally, Salesforce.com. Now here's the thing you got to realize. Salesforce is playing a different game than the others. They're playing a different game, and they're playing it pretty darn well. Salesforce is mostly selling an app, right? CRM. Can I ask, who in the room uses Salesforce CRM? You can still stay if you raise your hand, it's okay, right? A lot of you, right? I'm sure a lot of you are, right? It's a popular app, it's a fine application. Alongside it, they sell a PaaS platform, Force.com. They don't even do IaaS. They don't do IaaS. They don't do blobs. They've got a NoSQL database. They do identity, which is interesting. But they're not playing the same game as Microsoft, Amazon, Google. They're just not. Instead, they've got this app-led sale. You're going to buy CRM from them, let's say. They've got this Force.com platform. They will say to you, hey, listen, you use our CRM technology, and so you have customer data in the cloud with us. Why not build your apps that use the data in the cloud as well? It's a reasonable argument. Then they give you Force.com, which is a pretty straightforward platform. It's designed for enterprise applications. You can build some apps with point-and-click tools, or you can use their language called Apex, which is like Java. Interestingly, Microsoft has a technology that's very much like Force.com in Dynamics CRM called XRM. But Microsoft hardly ever talks about XRM for reasons that are lost on me. So Microsoft's got a very similar technology. It's not discussed very often. I know lots of users of Force.com who are generally happy. One thing to recognize, however, is that the lock-in here is total. When you build your app on Force.com, their database is their own structure. It's not relational. Their languages, their tools are unique. So you're locked into Force.com, and there is no lock-in like cloud lock-in. And here's why. If I run an application in my own data center, I buy an app, run it in my servers, and I stop paying maintenance on the app, well, I can still run the app. It'll work on my computers, right? If I build an app in the cloud that's locked in like Force, if I stop paying for the app, what happens? Answer, they shut my app down. You want to recognize the pretty severe nature of lock-in in some cloud technologies. Now, people out there who are using Force, most of them tell me they're fine with this. They don't care. Great. Just be aware. And be aware that Force is playing a very different game, Salesforce, than Microsoft, Amazon, Google. And as I've said, they're playing it well. Here's the Gartner MQ, the latest one, for PaaS. Who's the leader? Salesforce, Force.com. Microsoft's in second place, probably, I would guess, because Gartner's focus here is on enterprise solutions. And at this point in time, Microsoft's PaaS technology was focused on ISVs and enterprises. Going forward, they're changing that. App services, enterprise focused. So we'll see how this looks in the future. Look at this. Google has a PaaS technology called App Engine. App Engine was the first thing Google released a long time ago. App Engine was released before Azure. But App Engine is still a challenger in the PaaS Magic Quadrant. Why is that? Well, it hasn't changed all that much. And so, as I said earlier, people wonder, is Google serious about this? I wonder. If they were serious, why would their old, like 8 years old, PaaS technology still be in that challenger box, not a leader? Open question. And there's lots more vendors in this space, lots more. It's a big, crowded area. Folks can agree on what PaaS means to a great extent. Let's just talk about some other vendors for a minute here. IBM. So IBM had a bunch of little efforts. They had marketing campaigns around cloud for a while. They got no real traction. You saw how sunk they were in the Gartner MQ, the far lower left corner, before they bought SoftLayer. SoftLayer is half hoster, half IaaS technology. And so you can get bare metal and VMs, which IBM trumpets. It's a good thing. Makes sense. But here's the thing with IBM. Here's a big part of why they're not on my major quadrant, my major graph for comparing these things. It is that IBM a while ago announced that we're going to spend $1.2 billion on cloud data centers. And the press went, whoa. And then they said, well, this will be across about 24 data centers. And people realized that Microsoft, Amazon, Google, they spend that much money building a single data center. The thing you have to recognize here is that being in the public cloud platform market today as a vendor is a very capital-intensive thing. It requires large amounts of money to build very big, very automated data centers. IBM has seen its revenues decline for 13 quarters in a row. Where will they get the money to compete? It's really unclear. Lots of people in this space, including me most days, believe that the most likely outcome 5 years from now is there are three big players left, Amazon, Microsoft, Google. They might well be regulated at that point. I don't know. But the reason IBM is not on my earlier list is because, personally, I'm very skeptical that they can compete effectively at the scale of Amazon, Microsoft, Google. In fact, if you're interested, there's this article that appeared in Business Week a while ago that says a bunch of interesting things. It says this: IBM's failure to foresee the changes in its own future makes it less plausible they can guide its customers toward theirs. IBM is a great company. They were a client of mine for many years. They're a great company. They're falling on some challenges here, I think. And I don't think they've done the right thing necessarily around public cloud platforms. So, see what happens. VMware, also a big vendor in virtualization, an obvious thing to move into the cloud, you'd think. Yes, and VMware tried. They did several things to try to get hosters to offer IaaS using their vCloud technology. Hosters didn't respond all that well to that. They then began offering their own technology, now called vCloud Air. I love that name. The vCloud Air cloud platform with their own data centers. The thing is, vCloud Air is almost just IaaS. It's just VMs. And they partnered with Google. So you could buy Google Blobs, for example, through vCloud Air, which is interesting. But you saw where they were in the Gartner MQs. They and IBM were both close to or in that lower left-hand, I keep saying losers quadrant, a niche players quadrant, right? They're just not doing that well in this space. They've got the money problem as well, I think, against Amazon, Microsoft, Google, of building massive data centers. The investment's enormous. The skill set is challenging as well. So we'll see what happens here. At the moment, VMware doesn't look too promising in this market. And so, one more MQ before we close out this section here. Here's the MQ for blob storage, effectively. And you can see here, Amazon is a leader, Microsoft's a leader, Google's a leader. Everybody else is a niche player. I think it is likely, probable at least, probably likely, that this kind of MQ is the future of public cloud platforms. A bimodal MQ, where there are leaders and there are losers. Nothing in between. Because the market is so much about scale. And the guys who can do scale are Microsoft, Amazon, Google. So this MQ, the way it's organized, may well be a harbinger of the future for public clouds. In fact, I've shown you several MQs. I showed you one for IaaS, I showed you one for PaaS, I showed you one for storage, and I showed you one for identity. This is a Microsoft event, so let's summarize where they are in all of these MQs. The answer is, they're in second place. They're in second place across all four MQs. Now I ask you, is this not a classic Microsoft strategy? Remember SharePoint? Was SharePoint ever the best in anything? Maybe. But it was good enough across the whole range to be the right choice. Microsoft is second best across all of these right now, moving up. But nonetheless, being this kind of vendor, a leader across everything, not the leader in anything, is a classic Microsoft strategy. So I'm not surprised to see them show up this way in these summarized Magic Quadrants. In fact, another way to think about this that I find useful is this. Think about two dimensions a vendor might have, cloud strength and traditional enterprise strength. There are lots of vendors we've seen arise recently, Amazon, Salesforce, Google, that have lots of cloud strength. There are lots of vendors that have classic enterprise strength, IBM, HP, VMware. Microsoft's uniqueness in this market is they're the only traditional enterprise vendor that also has cloud strength. They're the only vendor in the upper right of this diagram. That's what's unique about them, I would suggest. And you know, people diss Steve Ballmer. I would never diss Steve Ballmer, because the investments that he decided to make, the risks he took, would put Microsoft there, because it was years ago they made those choices. It's interesting. Alone among the traditional enterprise vendors, Microsoft chose to invest lots and lots of money in public cloud platforms. So, all right, let me close by going back to where I started, by going back to this new default platform and running through it in a bit more detail in my last few minutes here. As we've discussed, public cloud platforms have all sorts of components. IaaS and PaaS and blobs and all that stuff. Look at the platform in a larger sense, though. SaaS applications are also important. Things like email, collaboration, productivity, CRM. On the client side, arguably three big categories matter today: PCs and laptops, tablets, and phones. So if you look at this picture and plug in Microsoft technologies, you get this. Azure, as we've discussed, has a range of things. In the SaaS side, Microsoft has Office 365, Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, Office Online. They have CRM Online. They're filling in those boxes. On the client side, they've got Windows 10 across all three of those categories. Amazon, as we've seen, is very strong on the cloud platform side. They've just begun to enter the SaaS application side with a Workmail, a hosted email solution. On the client side, this is mostly consumer focused. They've got Kindle Fire. They killed their phone recently. It's more consumer focused for platforms, but they're doing something there. Google, as we've seen, covers most of the bases of public cloud platforms. They also have a strong story in SaaS applications, Gmail, Google Apps in general, Google Docs, and so on. They also have, as you might have noticed, just a little bit of market share on the client side with this thing called Android, right? Gotten some popularity. The thing about Google, though, again, coming back to this, is do they make much money off of this? Not Android, no. Not on the platform, not so much. Are they serious? They are an advertising company. I really wonder how hardcore they want to be about this space. I really wonder. It's an open question, I would suggest. But they've got broad technical coverage here, which is interesting. OpenStack, well, not really a fair comparison. An open source project focused on only one piece of this big, broad story. Salesforce, again, playing a different game, but playing it very well with their PaaS offering built around their CRM application and nothing in the client space. Just to be clear here, when I say client, I'm discussing system level, OS level, Windows, Android, things like that. Salesforce, of course, has client apps. I don't mean that. I mean system level stuff. IBM pushing into things in their cloud platform. They have Bluemix, a PaaS technology. They bought Cloudant a while ago, a NoSQL vendor. Not too much, though, at all, in the SaaS space or in the client side. So see my point here? My point is, as this new default platform emerges, your vendors are going to change. The vendors you're used to for being the dominant players in the enterprise platform are going to change, because you can see who's doing what in this space. The world's going to be very different in 5 years, in 10 years. And VMware, again, a limited IaaS offering, and that's about it. So the world is really going to change, and you have to make choices. You've got to make choices about what you're doing here. Massive change in this space. You're all choosing partners for this new world. And public cloud platforms are a really important part of this choice because, as I said at the start of the talk, they're the foundation for competitive advantage, for custom apps, for differentiation. It's a very important choice. And I would encourage you to think about that choice like this. Think about that choice in terms of a marriage. An enterprise partner, you don't want to choose based on current attributes completely. You want to choose based on shared direction, shared values. If you choose based on current attributes, this world changes so fast, not a great option. I was in Bogota, Colombia earlier this year. Met with the CIO and his direct reports. They'd chosen a cloud platform. I asked the CIO, why'd you choose this one? He said, I don't know, my tech guys chose it. I thought, bad answer. CIO, you should know. This is such an important choice. You should be involved in this. You should know. Tech guys, we said, why did you choose this? The tech leader was there. He said, well, you know, we tested several of them, and this one in IaaS gave us new VMs in 5 minutes. This one gave us new VMs in 3 minutes. So we chose that one. I'm sorry, this is dumb. This is dumb because those sorts of things change so rapidly. You want to choose based on shared values, shared direction. If my wife had chosen me because she liked my hair, it would have been a bad choice, right? Things change. One hopes she chose based on something bigger and broader than that. So my point here, the last thing I want to leave you with, is this. Choosing public cloud platforms is a really important decision. Take this choice, take this decision seriously. It's a big part of your future. And I promise you, your future is going to be quite different and better than your world today. Thank you.